I need to make a confession. That is that I'm tired, sleepy. I don't see a lot of heads going like this, but I do have an advantage over you, and that is that I've never seen a preacher sleep while he's preaching, so it may be okay to stay. Would it be all right to stand? Everybody stand who cares to, and because I am very sleepy, and if we can breathe a little bit and stretch, why, maybe that would be a good thing. And I will forgive and have some understanding if I see somebody sleeping, but hopefully will not. Maybe seated. I'd like to first thank the brothers and sisters for inviting me here. I think it's been a good experience for me and my son, and you have the mingling and the the visiting has been good, and I'd like to thank you, Seth, for hosting us overnight, and look forward to a little more blessings as well. A topic relating to maturely to criticism. You know, I thought that this my topic deviated from the theme of the afternoon. You know, you have the first command, then you got the second one. Now this is a different subject, but it dawned on me, especially as the second brother was speaking, that you know what, this is part of it. It's tied right to loving our Lord and loving our neighbor as ourself. As I was preparing for this at home, I wondered what the brethren had in mind that assigned this, and so I emailed Lyndon here and asked him a question, and that was what your thinking is in relation to criticism. I was thinking there's good criticism and there's bad criticism, and he wasn't necessarily asking that I pick out the bad and talk about it, but just how to respond to either one. And because I had listened to one speaker one time, I don't believe he was a Mennonite, but he declared that there is no such thing as constructive criticism, and that may be depending on what you mean. But I think if you would look that up in the dictionary, you'd probably find that that's not correct. I think there is. So that's the approach I'm taking, simply relating maturely to criticism. And you know, I've concluded that whether or not it is constructive has as much to do with the one listening as the one speaking, perhaps more. Criticism can destroy churches from the inside out. Will we let it do that? Criticism can build up our congregations from the bottom up. Will we let it do that? Let's turn to 1 Peter 5. I'd like to read verses 1 to 7. As a foundation for this message, the elders which are among you I exhort, who am also an elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ and also a partaker of the glory that shall be revealed. Feed the flock of God which is among you, taking the oversight thereof, not by constraint, but willingly, not for filthy lucre, but of a ready mind, neither as being lords over God's heritage, but being ensamples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd shall appear, ye shall receive a crown of glory that fadeth not away. Likewise, ye younger, submit yourselves unto the elder. Yea, all of you be subject one to another, and be clothed with humility, for God resisteth the proud, and giveth grace to the humble. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time, casting all your care upon him, for he careth for you. It doesn't mention criticism, but it does give us the instructions on how to relate maturely to criticism here in these verses. If we feed the flock of God as he called us to, which that term feed the flock does not simply mean to hand the hay to the flock, here it is. It involves a lot more. You look that word up, it just does. And it's used to mean a lot more in other areas of the New Testament, the Greek word is. But it involves caring for the flock. If we do that, we will be criticized. Why? Well, first, we will make mistakes, and we just will. You show me a person that doesn't make mistakes, I'll show you a person that's not doing his work. Now, I don't know if you can show me one, but even if he's not, he's probably making mistakes. But that's the way it is. We need to humbly accept that. Second, even when we do our work well, we will be criticized because it is impossible to please everyone. Now, maybe this seems like painting a dark picture, a difficult picture, but that's not my intention. Because I believe. Is that? I'll say it this way, because criticism is a choice opportunity for church leaders that we very much too often, myself included, miss. Let's never let a good opportunity like that go by without, let's try not to. Since we will make mistakes, and since we will be criticized, no matter what we do, we're going to be criticized. It can go one of two bad ways. We either may allow fear of criticism to paralyze us. That's a real possibility, and I think I have fallen to that. The other side of that, the other possibility, is that we become callous to criticism, and that's also real. I've done that too, but I probably have become paralyzed more often than I become callous to that. But what happens when we become callous to criticism is that I appreciate this, brother. I believe, and we'll try to knock that out of my, whoever that was that told that, I'll try to knock that out a little more often out of my, I appreciated that criticism. But what happens is, we tend to justify our authority and trample over people when we become calloused to their criticism. It was Margaret Thatcher, this I do believe, I don't know for sure, but I heard that it was Margaret Thatcher who said, being a lady is like being in authority. If you have to tell people you are, then you're not. And I thought that was very good. Becoming lords over God's heritage is much more an attitude than it is a specific kind of church administration. So what do we do with criticism? We are not to let it paralyze us, and we are not to become calloused. What ought we to do? Well, We've looked at feeding the flock, taking the oversight, and we looked at being lords. The better way is in verse 3 also, not as being lords, but being ensamples. Ensamples. This is where criticism presents itself as a choice opportunity to us. And what do I mean? I mean that if we become shock absorbers within the congregation for our people and for each other, if we are examples in this, that it does trickle down and it does pass on to the rest in the congregation. And blessed is that congregation whose leaders have learned that that is the way it works. On the other hand, if we respond immaturely, how do we expect them to respond maturely when we call it approach them about a need? If I counted correctly in Exodus and Numbers, the children of Israel murmured against Moses once before they left Egypt and 10 times. Now, I would say it was probably many times, it was probably a lot more than that, but that is recorded. And so I looked at those different places, and we're not going to review them here, but I just want to give a little summary of how he responded to criticism. Seldom defensive, almost you could say never. There were times that he said things. Seldom defensive, always, I believe, always going to God. I think I had that one right. You can check it out. At times, even interceding for the people when God desired to destroy them. Amazing! Is that something that we can aspire to? That I'm talking about the attitude that he had about the people. A man that could possibly be more merciful towards the people that were rebelling than what the merciful God was. Can this be said of you and me? David also, he was a man after God's own heart. And I've often wondered, just what did God see in David that made him say that? And just what did God see when he told Samuel, you look on the outside, man looks on the outside, but I don't, I look on the inside. What there is something about David that is remarkable in relation to criticism. And I suspect it's at least directly tied to the heart of God. We're going to just for the rest of this message, we're going to look at how maturity shows itself in this area. Just a few points, how it shows itself, and we'll see a thing or two of David as well. Okay, how does maturity show itself in relation to criticism? And I'm talking about when people criticize us. And really think that is the best way to help others to respond like they ought to with criticism, to criticism, is to strive to respond like God would want us to. There are times we need criticism as leaders. Many times, actually. And let's look at David in that. 2 Samuel. Is that David? I believe it is. 2 Samuel 19, yeah. You know, Joab was not, I think we can say confidently, I don't know that the Bible says it, but Joab was not a man after God's heart. Nuh-uh. That's a story on itself. But he was wise, and he was useful in the kingdom tremendously much so. He saw things that David did not see. And here's one of them, 2 Samuel 19, 5-8. After Absalom was killed, and David, mourning, I guess Joab thought he was, well, we'll just read what he said. 2 Samuel 19, verse 5, and Joab came into the house to the king and said, "Thou hast shamed this day the faces of all thy servants, which this day have saved thy life, and the lives of thy sons and of thy daughters, and the lives of thy wives and the lives of thy concubines, in that thou lovest thine enemies and hatest thy friends." Pretty sharp words. "For thou hast declared this day that thou regardest neither princes nor servants. For this day I perceive that if Absalom had lived, and all we had died this day, then it had pleased thee well. Now therefore arise, go forth, and speak comfortably unto thy servants. For I swear by the Lord, if thou go not forth, there will not tarry one with thee this night. And that will be worse unto thee than all the evil that befell thee from thy youth until now. And what did he do? The king arose and sat in the gate. That's a mature response to criticism. God bless Brother David. That was beautiful. Now, even Peter, an apostle, he needed criticism. Let's turn to the New Testament, Galatians 2. And we will read Paul's criticism to David. Now, this wasn't coming from one of the lay brethren. It was coming from Paul, someone who had been converted after Peter. He was kind of newer, you know. What did he know about this thing? But here it is, again, sharp. It seems to me, maybe not. I'm not going to try to decide whether Paul said it all in the right way. Okay, Galatians 2, verse 11. "But when Peter was come to Antioch," well, we just need to back up a little. This was the case that had to do with I suppose it was the same thing where people came down from Jerusalem and started teaching that the person needs to keep the law to be saved and so forth, and there was a big thing over that. But anyways, verse 11, "When Peter was come to Antioch, I withstood him to the face." Good pattern there, by the way. It's not today's topic, but it's a good pattern to do it to the face. "Because he was to be blamed, for before that certain came from James, he did eat with the Gentiles. But when they were come, he withdrew and separated himself, fearing them which were of the circumcision, and the other Jews dissembled likewise with him," which means became hypocrites. "Insomuch that Barnabas was also carried away with their dissimulation." Well, that's hypocrisy. "But when I saw that they walked not uprightly according to the truth of the gospel, I said unto Peter before them all," and I don't know whether that's a good plan or not, but he did, "If thou, being a Jew, livest after the manner of Gentiles and not as do the Jews, why compellest thou the Gentiles to live as the Jews?" And he goes, and it's just, I never was able to figure out where it stopped and where his writing began. It seemed like he just, but Peter needed it. And we'll look later at his response. So when we need it, how do we respond? Well, we just take it. And here's a few more points. When it comes alone, let it depart alone. What I mean is, now is not the time to say, "Oh, by the way, I had this about you," or "by the, you know, how about your..." You're a lot worse. And I mean, there's so many things that come up within. To be victorious in this, we must take the works of the flesh, read over them in Galatians 5, and identify what just is going on inside here when that criticism is coming. If it comes alone, let it go alone. Instead of saying, yes, but, let's say, really? It's okay to say, I never thought. It's okay. Be honest about it. But ask for more. Ask for more. Did you mean this? What about this? I want to learn from this. What suggestions? Can we really do this, leaders? The answer is yes, we can. Worry less about whether it is fair and whether the details are right. Because these are things coming up in here. If you're like me, anybody ever experienced this? You know a better story, but worry less about that and more about getting the bigger picture of what he's trying to say. Worry more about what God is telling me. It's probably much more right than we think. Let's try to get that point. Again, I want to go to David. Now, this is an extreme example, but I think it does show us what the heart of God. David had the heart after God's. 2 Samuel 16 gives the example when David was really in trouble. This was before the other criticism that we read. But this has always impressed me. Absalom had rebelled, and he was actually, the kingdom was turned to Absalom. Heart of people had gone to Absalom. And so his own son chased his father out of Jerusalem. Very, very wrong. But it was a time when former hurts. It was a good time for them to come bubbling out and criticism. 2 Samuel 16:5, when David came to Bahurim, behold, Second Samuel, is that what I said? Behold, thence came out a man of the family of the house of Saul, yes. His name was Shimei, the son of Gera. He came forth and cursed as he came, and he cast stones at David and at all the servants of the king of King David and all the people, and all the mighty men were on his right hand and on his left. And thus said Shimei when he cursed, come out, this bloody man, thou man of Belial, that's the devil. The Lord hath returned upon thee all the blood of the house of Saul, in whose stead thou hast reigned, and the Lord hath delivered the kingdom into the hand of Absalom thy son. And behold, thou art taken in thy mischief. Behold, thou art a bloody man. Then said Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, unto the king, why should this dead dog curse my lord the king? Let me go over, I pray thee, and take off his head. And the king said, what have I to do with you, you sons of Zeruiah? And if I remember correctly, Joab was one of them as well. They had a different heart. So let him curse. Because why? The Lord has said to him, curse David. And just go down here a little bit farther. David said to Abishai, verse 11, to all his servants, behold, my son, which had come forth my bowels, seeketh my life. How much more now this Benjamite do it? May he do it. Let him alone and let him curse, for the Lord hath bidden him. Now, do we really think the Lord had bidden him? Did David really think that? Probably not. I'm not accusing him of lying. I'm just saying that he understood the sovereignty of God, and he wanted to get a message that was coming from this. He thought perhaps God was sending him for his own good. And he was going to listen. And we can do that. Can't we? Can we do that? Now, I have to balance this out a little bit. Well, no, I don't. You can. But I will. What about when it comes as a result of what we thought was the brotherly address? There are times when that happens, and it comes back on us, criticism. recently, my co-minister said, Rodney said, it's good for you to do what you know. Well, kind of getting. Well, anyways, he said, it's okay, and it's good to listen to criticism. But he said, don't let it stop you from doing your work. And, well, I needed that criticism. I needed that. We must not allow it to paralyze us. Perhaps that's just fear. Or allow us to... He said, his encouragement, he said, you know, you're right. I think you're right. But we're getting off the subject or something like that, you know, and come bring it back to the issue that you were addressing. So there is that side to it, and we do need to do that. Sometimes it comes the next day. Let's not be too quick to connect it, but let us, you know, say, oh, he's responding to my... but we should, we must do the work that God has called us to do. And sometimes that means carrying through, seeing, getting to the bottom of the need that we have addressed, just following methodically. So that's another side to that. What really does become a problem is when that does happen and we allow it to go on. And we go, and it goes round and round, and we really forget what God had started. It reminds me of a book I read just recently. If you remember the Nate Saint story and those five men that went into the Alca territory in Ecuador, and they were martyred, they were speared. This was a follow-up book that told the stories of how the Alca, heart of the tribe, Alca tribe, was won. It was won by one of them, one of the key people that were involved in winning the heart of the Alca people was Nate's sister, Rachel, I believe was his sister. But I read that story, and the book didn't point it out, but I got to thinking, you know, that what really happened in this story is that five men stopped through death a back and forth that was going on for generations. You have to read that story perhaps to understand. I'll explain just a little bit. The word Alca really means, they say, they say that it means spear, to spear, the people who spear, and that's what they did. It's not what they did for a living except to kill animals, but they did it for justice sake because they were right. And they did it because they feared. Now, they speared one another as much as they speared outside people. There was a constant culture of retaliation that dwindled their numbers in their tribe down to, it was just getting less and less. And what was happening is that Uncle So-and-so speared, you know, this one, and he had to go get him back, and so he'd spear and maybe get the one that was close to him and it just went on and on, and it was back and forth, and there was arguments among the tribe as to what the outside people were like. Every now and then one of them would get shot, and so they finally concluded that all of them are that way. And I was convinced after reading that book that had they used their guns, and you know they had them, those five, they shot in the air. This comes from the Indians that they told them how it happened. Had they used their guns, and they easily could have, they would not at that time have had that opening. Somebody had to act as the shock absorber and stop the process. They took it, the spears into their bodies, and they died, and that's where it stopped. That is the thing that convinced them That's why the door opened, so they could go in. And that's, what does that have to do with criticism? Well, criticism is that it's a spirit, and it's often, and by the way, it was fear, it was retaliation and fear. And that is the things that drives us too often. It's the desire for justice and fear. I don't know if I can explain that fear, but there's something in there. There's no fear in love. Perfect love casts out fear. I've harbored fear. I've seen it in others. I don't believe that always means they have no love. It's just that it's not been perfected. And I would desire that we would perfect our love by learning from our Maker and Master how to trust Him enough to get rid of that fear. I know there's another message in there. We need to move on. What about sensitivity to others when to others talking about us? Now, this is hardly criticism, but yes, it is kind of in the same package. You know, in our ministers' meetings, sometimes, or very, quite often, we talk about others, and then we hear about that they are sensitive to that. And I mean, sometimes we forget that. We should try to remember that be just as sensitive about talking about them, even in our ministers' meeting, but we do need to sometimes, but be sensitive. But can we say that we should also give freedom to others to talk about us? I'm not talking about gossip, but to actually maybe that's a question for you, how much of that should be done. But I've found it a blessing to just, especially my co-ministry, and if there's someone that has a struggle about me or whatever, to just free them up to go and talk to them, to let them. I think that can be a good example as well. Now, in closing, I hope as I look across these jumbled notes here that I've covered. I'll just leave the rest to the Lord. 2 Peter 3:15 in closing. I understand that this is some years after Paul withstood Peter to the face. And it shows me that Peter did relate to maturely to this criticism, and this blesses me. Let's see, where do we break in here? He's kind of in a sentence here. Account, verse 15, that the long suffering of our Lord is salvation, even as our beloved brother Paul, also, according to the wisdom given unto him, hath written unto you, and also in all his epistles, speaking in them of these things, in which are some things hard to be understood, which they that are unlearned and unstable rest, as they do also the other scriptures, unto their own destruction. This is a real blessing. A golden opportunity for Peter to criticize, to take stand against Paul, because some of the things he said are easy to misunderstand. But instead, he calls him our beloved brother. May we follow that example.